Mo'ed Katan, Daf Yod Dalid. We begin the third Perek, which is begins talking about the prohibition of taking a haircut during Chol HaMo'ed. Because the sugya today is going to compare not cutting one's hair during Chol HaMo'ed with also the prohibition of a mourner, an avel, also may not cut his hair. Once that comparison is brought, we're going to continue into various laws of avelut. And in fact, this Perek is the major source of all the laws of Avelut. And so we begin. Most people cannot take a haircut, and these are the exceptions. Someone who was traveling overseas and was not able to take their haircut while they're on the boat, while they're traveling, and they get home, they arrive on Chol HaMo'ed, all unkempt. They are allowed to take a haircut. Beta shivya, beta asurin, someone who was in captivity or in prison, and they were not able to get a haircut in prison. And so now they are released on Chol HaMo'ed. They can take a haircut on Chol HaMo'ed and look good for the rest of the holiday. Someone who was banned, a nidui, cannot take a haircut. But if the rabbis saw fit to release the person, whatever he did wrong, he made teshuvah, and now is his first opportunity. He couldn't have taken one before. He can take a haircut. Someone who made a vow, for whatever reason, not to take any haircuts, maybe like my kids, they don't like taking haircuts, right? And then he came to the chacham, and after his hair is all disheveled, he says, "Listen, I made this vow. I didn't mean it. I can't do it." And the rabbis found a way to undo the vow, and that happened on Chol HaMo'ed. He can go and take a haircut. Also, a nazir is not allowed to cut his hair while he's a nazir. Once he finishes, then he cuts his hair. So if he finishes his nazirut during Chol HaMo'ed, he cuts his hair. A mesorah also, during his purification process, cuts his hair. So if he's going from tameh to tahor, and then if that happens during Chol HaMo'ed, he is permitted to cut his hair. There is also a prohibition against doing laundry on Chol HaMo'ed. The idea here would be that this is a time-consuming and annoying errand that is also takes work, and so you should be concentrating on celebrating the holiday. And therefore, in general, one may not launder on Chol HaMo'ed, but here's the exceptions. Similarly, someone who was traveling or who comes back as from captivity or prison, and now his clothes are all dirty, he didn't get to do a laundry there, he can wash on Chol HaMo'ed. And also someone who was ostracized and so was not washing his clothes. He's separated from everybody. No one wants to help him out. And so now he can come and wash his clothes if he is brought back from Nidui. Or if he made a vow and said, I vow not to launder my clothes. And once he gets smelly enough, he comes to the sages and says, I want to undo the vow. If they release him on Chol HaMo'ed, then he can. Point is, he didn't have a chance to do it before. Mitbechot hayadayim. Here are also some exceptions regarding laundry. Hand towels. Mitbechot hasaparim. Barber's towels. Maybe used to cover the person when they're taking a haircut. Mitbechot hasefag. Drying towels. Zavin. So all these towels, they get dirty very quickly, I'm sure. And I know in my house, right, towels are being washed all the time. And also these people who have various excretions, zavin zava, have genital flow, so they are constantly getting dirty, and nidan yolodot also are experiencing bleeding, and therefore need to wash their clothes often. And actually, anyone who became tameh and now becomes tahor, their clothing also becomes tameh and needs to go into a mikveh and be washed. And therefore, all these are permitted because they have to. There's no choice to just wash them before. They have to be washed now during Chol HaMo'ed. Ushad kol adam asurim, but for everybody else, all these things are prohibited. All right, so that is the Mishnah. And in the Gemara, we're going to see a few important topics. Number one, what's the reason that we can't cut hair and do laundry on Chol HaMo'ed? And then we're going to see, well, are there any exceptions that to that rule? For example, if somebody loses something and they didn't get a chance to cut the hair before because they were looking for their lost item. And does it matter if it's a regular person or an artisan? Okay, so that's the first topic. Let's see. What is the reason for the general prohibition against cutting hair and washing? Here we go. This is actually a very good source. Mishnah and Tani teaches that. However, Kohanim, whose turn it is to take care of the Beit HaMikdash during that week, and the non-Kohanim, who represent Bnei Yisrael, who have to be on guard and represent all Bnei Yisrael, and they're for the Korbanot of that week, they are not allowed to cut their hair or to wash. Point is that they should be concentrating on their job during the week, and they should also look nice. So therefore, they should cut hair and launder beforehand. The exception is b'chamishim mutarin, on Thursday of that week they're allowed. Mipdekevod Shabbat, they want to come into Shabbat looking nice, but the rest of the week they may not. Now that's the Mishnah. Mishnah doesn't actually say why. So the sage explained, they should not enter the week. They start off on Shabbat, and they should not start off when looking disheveled and said, "Oh, I'll wash tomorrow on Sunday and Monday." And this is the same reason for Chol HaMoed. We don't want people, everybody's busy before the holiday, busy doing all other things. And they say, you know what? I'll wash my clothes. I'll take a haircut. On the first day of Chol HaMoed, and then I'll look good for the rest of it. No, we want you to enter Yom Tov looking good and wearing clean clothes. And therefore, we tell people you may not take a haircut and wash during the holiday. That way, in the whole week I'm not going to be able to, and I better do it before. And then everyone will enter the holiday all nice and clean. Okay, in those days it made sense because most people had beards, and so if you trim it and look nice in the beginning, then they would be okay the rest of the time. How does this apply nowadays when many people shave every day and then they look menuvalin because they're not shaving? Is a really important halachic question that is dealt with by the poskim. Okay, ba'ere bizera avdalo aveda erev hadegel kevan de'anis hu adanis mutar odima kevan de'lam chamileta la. So the Mishnah gave a few examples of people that are permitted, right? Came back from a road trip and so on. But what about other cases that may be similar? Someone has a similar excuse that they were not able to go to the barber before. Does this exemption apply to them too? And the example we're using is someone who lost an item. It was a really important item, and he's looking all over for it. And then he had no time to wash his clothes or to cut his hair. So do we say, since it was beyond his control, it's also mutad? This is like a person who got out of jail. Or maybe not. Maybe the lemuchamilta. It's not apparent to everyone. See, if someone just arrives back from a trip or from jail, everybody says, "Oh, you were away," and the thing, or you were in jail, and finally you're freed, and everybody knows why they couldn't take a haircut before. It's a public matter. Whereas someone loses his jewelry, right? It's not a public matter. People are going to see him during Chol HaMoed washing his clothes and be like, "Oh, I guess. Well, why is he doing that? I guess it's allowed." And so. That is the problem. So in that case, it would not be an exception. So does it matter if it's a public thing or a private thing? So that's the question. Abaya says it's no good. You cannot do it. We can't make exceptions. Once you make a rule, it's a rule. I mean, when we first made the rule, we made exceptions for those few things that are public matters, but we can't make an exception for every little person that comes and says, "Oh, I had something I had to do." And how do we know that rule of no exceptions? Well, we learn it from Pesach. On Pesach, the rabbis made a rule that these tzidikin, these Syrian cakes, these are cakes that are made in a special shape. And for most people, it takes a long time to cut them out and make them in these shapes. Therefore, the rabbi said, for Pesach, we have to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. And therefore, you got to bake everything as quickly as possible. So no spending time decorating the cakes and making them shapes. That was the rule. Then this Baitos individual, he was a top chef. And he said, listen, I have a way of making these cakes and doing it quickly. I have a stamp and a form, and I could do it. The rabbi said, no, sorry, even though we trust you, that you know how to do it, we can't make a rule that says all these types of cakes are not allowed, except for the ones you buy from the Baitos bakery. Those are allowed. Then what kind of rule is that? Therefore, you have to say something across the board. So to here, the exceptions in the Mishnah are valid exceptions, and that's it, no other ones. Okay, Billy Tamich, Ahada Amarabi Asi, Amarabi Yochanan, Komisha and Lo Ella Haluk Ehad, Motal Habeso Becholosha Moed, Hatam Name, Yom Rukla Sidikin Nasurin Sidike by Tos Umutarin. Once we have this rule in place, we're going to use it as a challenge to Rabbi Yochanan, because he introduced another exception, and he said, someone who has only one shirt to wear, one article of clothing, and so he's wearing it every day, he can't last a whole week without laundering. So he is permitted to launder during Chol HaMoed. But in that case, why don't you apply the same rule and say, we can't make exceptions, right? Especially this is a private thing. People don't know. I don't know how many clothes this person has, if he has only one thing. And then you're going to say, oh, no one can do it except him. He's allowed to do it. So why don't you say the same thing and say no exceptions against Rabbi Yochanan? And the answer is, this person who has only one garment, his belt will be the proof for him. How so? When he's washing his shirt, well, what's he going to be wearing? He's not going to walk around naked while he's waiting for it to wash and dry. So he'll take his outer coat, but because he doesn't want his outer coat to open, he's going to bring his belt and tie it closed. That's an unusual way, because usually your belt is on your regular pants, not on your outer coat. And so everyone sees, oh, he's putting his belt on his outer coat. Must be because he has nothing, he's not wearing anything underneath, because he has only one shirt. Like maybe a long tunic, he has only one. And so everybody knows, oh, he's washing his clothes because he only has one pair of clothes. And therefore, that is a valid exception because it has a public aspect as opposed to if it's only a private aspect. Rav Asher taught the above question in a slightly different way, not just a regular person that lost something, but let's say it's a craftsman, someone that everybody knows, you know, the tailor, the barber, and he lost something. He lost his scissors, right? On the Erev HaDegel. Now everybody knows because they all know him and they'll go to him and like, you know, what's going on, what happened? And so because this has a public aspect, maybe you'll say, Kevan de uman hu muhamilata. Oh, it's evident why he didn't wash his clothes or take a haircut. Or Dilma Kevan de la muhamilata ki hanach la teku. Or maybe you'll say, it's not quite as evident as the other example, someone who got out of jail and was like, oh, did you hear he get out of jail? This one is not so evident. So it's kind of in between case. And so we leave it up for grabs. And therefore, we leave this with the general principle that the items that are in the Mishnah all have in common that they are publicly known, and that's why the rabbis are comfortable making them as exceptions, but not for any private excuse. Okay, and the next item on our agenda is, does it matter why you traveled, right? So you traveled, for fun, just for a vacation, and you plan to come back. A lot of people travel for Pesach at the beginning, then they go somewhere else in the middle. So that means they can all just take a haircut because they happen to be traveling. Does it matter the reason that you're traveling? It seems it does. Here we go. Matnitin de la kede biuda de tanya. De biuda omer. So even though in the Mishnah it says that someone who's traveling and returns may take a haircut, we say must be our Mishnah disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says someone who was traveling may not take a haircut because he left without permission. He just went for an optional trip, and that's not good enough. Okay, so that's very interesting. And that Rav is going to say this is not an absolute machloket. It depends why. If someone is going to travel just for recreation, then everyone agrees it's prohibited. You didn't have to go, right? You could have stayed home and planned from before to take a haircut and come back before the holiday. So therefore, you are not excused. A person who goes for travel just for fun, may not take a haircut. And everyone would agree with that, even the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, even the Tanakh of our Mishnah would agree with Rabbi Yehuda in that sense. If a person is going for basic sustenance, he has to go for a business trip, otherwise he'll have nothing to eat. Everyone would agree that that's permitted. He has to go. It wasn't an option for him. And Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's permitted. The argument between the our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda is when someone's going for extra profit. He has enough to eat. He could stay if he stays home. He's going on his business trip to make extra more, to buy some luxuries. Is that like a pleasure trip, or is it like a business trip? It's somewhere in between. That's the case where our Mishnah would say, it's okay, you can take a haircut. The Buddha would say, no, that's like a pleasure trip, and therefore it's prohibited. Okay, good. Now, Metibe. All that was what Rava said. That's Rava's explanation. But we're going to challenge Rava's explanation because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, many generations earlier, said something similar to that already. Rabbi says a lot of this type of statement in many cases. And he splits the difference. This is a compromise. I agree. It makes sense to me what Rabbi Yehuda says when someone goes without permission. But when he goes, meaning when it's optional, when he has to go, then shelo b'shut, without permission, meaning optional. He didn't have to go. Rechamim kesha b'shut, when he has to go, like for business, then I agree with Rechamim that it's okay, he can take a haircut. So you see from Rabbi's formulation that Rabbi Yehuda, he says, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda only in this case. It means Rabbi Yehuda would say it's prohibited, even in that case, all cases. And when he says, I agree with Rechamim that you can take a haircut, In one case, it means he agrees in one case, but Chachamim themselves will say it in every case. So that goes against Rava that says, no, they really agree on the extreme cases. They only disagree on the middle case. Okay, that's basically what the Gemara is about to say. And Gemara is just going to say it in a little bit more elaborate language. When the B says, without permission, what does he mean by that? That permission, meaning he just went for pleasure, traveling, but you, Rava, you said, everyone says that's prohibited. So it can't mean that because that would be the machlok. He says, I agree with Rabbi Shelo Bereshut. So everyone would agree with that. So rather, it must be means mizonot. But in that case, everybody says, okay. So rather, it must be that this is when he's going for extra profit. And that's the case where he says, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda, kishiasa bilo shelo bershut, so that would be prohibited. If someone goes for profit, then he cannot take a haircut when he comes back. Okay, that's what it would seem from the first half of a statement. From the second half of the statement, we'll do some exercise and we'll come out with the opposite, right? Because you see that there's no middle case in the B statement, so the middle case gets lost. I agree that you can take a haircut when you go with permission. Rabbi says, my b'shut, what case is the shoot? Ilam zonot, if it's for basic sustenance, but Rava said, everybody agrees it's okay. So he wouldn't say, I only agree with him in that case. Rather, it must be he's going for profit. And he says, he says, I agree with Rabbi Yehuda that says you were not allowed. And that contradicts the implication that we had from the first half. And so therefore you see that if in fact that Rava, you're right, that everybody agrees with each other on the extreme cases, that means that they only disagree in the middle case. But if that's so, then how could it be, I agree with one in one case and one with another case when there's only one case that they disagree about in the first place? Okay, so the point is, Rabbi's statement cannot be reconciled with Rava, and here's how we resolve it. Yes, it can be reconciled. Rabbi didn't say, I agree with Rabbanan. Rather, he's saying, Rabbi Yehuda, the previous Amora, Bar Ilai, fourth generation, agrees with Rabbanan. When he goes shelo b'shut, when he has to go, then he agrees as permitted. U'mayanehu l'shut. Shelo b'shut means with that permission, he just goes for pleasure travel. So he didn't have to go. And in that case, everyone would agree Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Yehuda that is prohibited in that case. Because the Chamim would only disagree if he's going for extra profit. But if he's going for a pleasure trip, then they would agree to be stringent. Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbanan that's permitted to take a haircut when he has a good reason to go. For basic sustenance. Because in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Because Rabbi Yehuda only disagrees if he's going for profit, but if it's for basic sustenance, he would agree. And so by doing this, by saying that the B here didn't mean that I agree with one in one case and one with another case, but rather the B is reporting that Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbanan in one case, Rabbanan agrees with Rabbi Yehuda in the other extreme case, and therefore they only argue on the middle case. Well, and that, and reinterpreting to be that way, we're reinterpreting to be to fit into what Rava said, and that way we save Rava. So even though Rava is an Amora and later not as authoritative as Rabbi, but it sounds like the Sugya thinks that Halacha should be that way, and Rava makes sense, and therefore make Rabbi's words fit into what Rava said. Ends up being the same conclusion, actually. Okay, Amar Shemuel. Katana nolad b'moed, mutal legaleach b'moed. So let's discuss the next thing. Can a newborn baby cut his hair? Okay, we don't generally cut newborn babies' hair because they don't have a lot of hair. But I guess in those days, for whatever reason, they like to cut the newborn's hair. So Shmuel says, a newborn who's born on cholam, on holiday, you can cut his hair during Chol HaMoed. There's no greater prison than being inside the womb. There was no way he was going to get a haircut inside the womb. And so his first opportunity to get a haircut is when he's born. And that's on the Chag, and therefore it's permitted. So that's what Shmuel says. Now, we're going to derive from this an inference. That's only if he was born on Chol HaMoed would be permitted. If he was born before the holiday starts, then it would be prohibited, because if he was born before Yom Tov, you should have cut his hair before Yom Tov, and he would have the same law as anybody else, no haircuts, even for little babies. All right, Metiv Rav Pinchas, Rav Pinchas challenges that from Braita. Kol elu shamru mutal legalech b'moed, mutal legalech b'me evlo. This is a very important statement. Here's where the laws of mourning are first introduced, and they're by comparison. And it says, anyone who is permitted to cut his hair during the festival may also cut his hair as a mourner. So for example, if someone is a mourner and gets out of jail and so was not able to cut his hair beforehand, that mourner can cut his hair. And so any exemption for Chol HaMoed also applies to Avel. That's what the Braita says. Now the Gemara comes and derives from the Braita the contrapositive, or whatever this is called. Ha asule galech b'moed, asule galech b'me evlo. Therefore, we can derive that anyone who may not cut his hair during Chol HaMoed also may not cut his hair when he is avil. Now, this is not really a logical, logically sound derivation, because it's not necessarily true. It could be that works only one way. Whoever is permitted to get a haircut during the holiday is for sure permitted during avil. Avil is less stringent, right? But it could be that there may be some people that cannot take a haircut during the festival, but nevertheless, in a similar situation, a mourner could, because a mourning is less stringent. So it's not necessarily true. But right now, we're following this logic, and now when using that to challenge this statement here of Shmuel by saying as follows: Via mat katan it be pelukta nimset avelut noheget bekatan. If you're saying for an infant, there are some cases when an infant cannot cut his hair when he was born before the holiday. So that would mean that, say, there's a prohibition against the katan for cutting his hair during Chol HaMoed, and you just said that anyone who's not allowed to cut his hair during Moed is also not allowed during avelut. So then that would mean that some of the laws of avelut apply to a child. In this case, even an infant. Right, that would be the implication. However, that's impossible, because the Braita says there is no mourning law. There are no mourning laws for an infant. Vatanya mekarein lekatan mipnei agmat nefesh. That when Let's say a parent of a child dies, then we cut the clothing, tear the clothing of the child, not because the child himself has an obligation to mourn, but rather we do that to raise grief. Everybody sees, oh, this poor kid lost a parent, and by tearing that clothes, everybody feels bad about it, right? And that's appropriate during that time. So we do it just for everyone else, not for the katan itself. So you see here that minors do not have to follow the laws of mourning. And therefore, that is against this, the implication here. And so therefore, this is impossible. So therefore, we should not, since children are not mourners, therefore children should not be prohibited from cutting hair when they're mourning, and they also should not be prohibited from cutting hair when they're a newborn, even if they were born before the holiday. And that's a challenge to Shmuel. All right, now we're going to undo this by showing the logical fallacy. In the Braita, doesn't say that anyone who they are all prohibited. Anyone who cannot take a haircut on the Moed cannot do Avel. We only said permitted. So really it could be some are prohibited and some are permitted. Some people are prohibited and permitted during Chol HaMoed, but they may nevertheless still be permitted as in Avel. And so he breaks that logic, he reveals that logical fallacy, and therefore there is no challenge to the statement of Shmuel. Okay, good. That's all one version of the statement of Shmuel. And now we have a second version. And now we're going to bring that same statement instead of as a challenge, as an attempted proof, and we're rejected. So everything's the opposite now. And here's a second version of Shmuel. Katan mutalik alecho b'moed, lo shenat nolad b'moed, lo shenat nolad meikara. An infant may cut his hair on Chol HaMoed, and it doesn't matter if he was born on the holiday or if he was born before the holiday. The laws of the cutting hair do not apply at all to an infant. Good. So this is a lenient version. So Pinchas says, I have a proof for you from the following Braita that says, anyone who may take a haircut on the holiday, well, also may cut his hair if he's an avel. Same thing. And when we bring the same logic, therefore, anyone who may not cut his hair on the holiday may not cut his hair when he's in Avel. Now, this makes sense, because if you would say a child may not cut his hair, then that would turn out that there is laws of mourning that apply to a child, but that's not true. We only tear a child's clothing because to make grief for everybody else, not because he has to, and therefore a child does not have to follow the laws of mourning, and therefore for sure may cut his hair when he's in mourning. Since he is allowed to cut his hair when he's mourning, then that we can bring a proof from there that he may cut his hair during Chol HaMoed, and no matter what, because otherwise, if it was Asur on Moed, it would be Asur on and Avel also. So isn't that a good proof? No, that's not a good proof. There's a logical fallacy, right? The Mishnah only said whatever is mutar on Moed is mutar on Avel, but it could be there would be something asur. So just because there's no mourning for a child and the child can cut his hair as an Avel doesn't mean anything regarding a child cutting his hair during Moed. Moed could be more stringent. All right, very good. Now, since we just mentioned laws of mourning, we're going to ask and show that the laws of mourning do not apply during Chol HaMoed. And this is going to begin a series of three different similar cases. What they all have in common is that there are practices of separation. When someone's in mourning, they're kind of separated from the community. Everybody comes to visit them, but they're sitting, they're quiet, and they are kind of feel like outsiders, and similar to someone banned, who also sits on the floor and wears black and tears his clothes, Misora, who goes out of the camp. So all these three, we're going to ask, do they apply during Chol HaMoed? That's going to be the question. We're going to see that the law, a state of mourning does not apply during Chol HaMoed. One cannot be an avel during Chol HaMoed. But the other two, we're going to conclude, do apply. One can be in Nidui, and one can be in Mesorah and separated even during Chol HaMoed. Okay, so here's the statement. Avel eno noheg avelut baregel. And someone who would be in mourning because he lost someone before or during the holiday does not practice any of the laws of mourning during the holiday because you have to be happy on your holiday. And that is a Torah law. You must be happy on the festival. And that overrides the law of mourning. So here we go. If someone was in mourning before the holiday started, and so someone, a loved one passed away a day, two, 3 days before the holiday started, the mitzvah of the public, meaning the holiday, everyone celebrates the holiday, is more important and overrides the mitzvah of the private mitzvah, right? The laws of mourning is only for that person himself that he said because he lost a loved one. And so the public celebration overrides the private mourning. Interesting, it calls mourning an aseh, which makes it sounds like it is, in fact, a deoraita. There's a huge discussion on laws of mourning, deoraita, drabanan. It seems like at least the first day of mourning is deoraita. So yes, even if it's deoraita, nevertheless, the holiday is more important. I mean, it's interesting, you know, can you control your feelings? It still might be sad. It's true, but you know, somehow you have to, the holiday is here, and that's got to bring you back into a better mood. That's the power of a chag. V'yaveluta hashtahu, and if a person's loved one passed away during a holiday, in the middle, la te'aseh de'achid v'dache'aseh de'rabim, the private mourning will not override the public celebration, and so that person, and this is the halacha today, if someone dies during the Chol HaMoed, the loved ones, they'll bury right away, but they will only begin the mourning period after the holiday finishes. So therefore, no matter what case, nobody is in mourning, practices the laws of mourning during the holiday. Okay, so that's it. That's the halacha. We finish with that for now. Menudeh. Now the question, what about someone who is ostracized? It's not very happy. Maybe you would say the same thing. He has to be happy. And look, he has to go eat alone. Right? No one can invite him over for a holiday meal. He can't come to shul or anything. So what about that? So Rav Yosef has a bit of an indirect proof that yes, a person is ostracized during the holiday, because we also learn that courts do come together on the holiday for capital cases, for cases regarding lashes, and for monetary law. Now, if the court makes a decision and the person says, "I'm not listening to you. I don't care. I'm not paying the other guy. I'm not doing it." Right? What do? We put him in nidui. And so, if a court actually sits and gives verdicts during the holiday, then it must be that we do have the there is nidui that applies during the holiday, during the festival, and during Chol HaMoed too. Okay, so there you go. That's a proof that yes. It's a continuation of the proof. And if you say that the laws of Nidui do not apply on the holiday, meaning someone who was in Nidui, once the holiday starts, oh, that's it. Just like you stop the mourning, you stop the Nidui. Well, if the holiday would stop the Nidui altogether, then it's impossible to think that a Bet Din who would judge a person for whatever verdict, and then he didn't follow it, then they put him in Nidui. It'd be impossible to say that the holiday stops a previous Nidui, but yet the rabbis can institute a new Nidui. That would be impossible, right? So if the rabbis can institute a new Nidui, that means a person who was already Menudeh would continue to be in that state of being banned even when the holiday starts. There you go. That's the proof that someone can be ostracized during the holiday. Says, hold on, maybe that's not a proof. Maybe when the court gathers, they don't give the final judgment till after the holiday. They just sit in, look at the evidence and discuss it, deliberate about it, but they won't give a final judgment. Because otherwise, it has to be so. Because otherwise, let's say you have capital punishment. Do you put someone to death on a holiday? We don't impose capital punishment on the holiday. And so it must be that they're only deliberating and they're not giving any verdicts. So there's no proof from here that you also have nidui. So we challenge Abaye. So how come memanayim esimchat yom tov? No, it can't be, because it can't be that they're only deliberating and not actually giving the verdict, because the judges would not be not have happiness on the holiday, the tenya. And that a court who's coming together and they decide to put one to death, they may not eat and drink the rest of the day. The reason is because it's not appropriate for the members of the court to be enjoying themselves, having a nice meal, while they're sentencing someone to capital punishment. Therefore, if they would be judging capital punishment on that day, they would not be able to enjoy the holiday, because they'd be fasting the whole day rather than eating and drinking and enjoying. All this is brought as a proof for Abaye's statement, because if they cannot fast during the holiday, then they cannot possibly impose capital punishment, because on that day they impose capital punishment, they have a fast. And if they're fasting, then they're not enjoying Simchat Yom Tov. Therefore, they're not imposing capital punishment on the holiday. Since they're not imposing capital punishment, you see that they're not giving any verdicts at all. They're only deliberating during the holiday, and they'll wait till after the holiday to actually give the verdict. And therefore, there is no proof at all from here or whether there is banning or no banning on the festival. Just like in capital punishment, they only come to deliberate. So too in all the cases, including ones involving banning, they're only deliberating and they're not banning anybody. So that's Abaye's statement. Amar le, Rav Yosef said to him, it's impossible. We have a rule that you cannot delay judgment, right? The judges have to be prompt and efficient, and they can't just wait around and say, oh, we're going to deliberate for an extra few days till after the holiday. Person's defendant sitting there waiting. We can't make him wait. So what do we do? So rather, it is possible for the judges to give a verdict of capital punishment even during the holiday and still enjoy the holiday. How do they do that? They come in the morning and they deliberate and they realize, you know what, this guy looks guilty. Hey, let's pause, right? We'll take a break for a few hours, take a break for lunch. They can do that. You're not delaying if you just wait a few hours. And then they'll go home and they'll eat and they'll drink the whole day. And that's okay, because they didn't give the verdict yet, so there's not a problem. And then when it comes close to sunset, they come back and meet and get together again. And then they decide the judgment and they give the verdict for his capital punishment, and then they kill him even on Chol HaMoed. And so you see here that, yes, it's possible to both enjoy the day, and then I didn't give the punishment yet, so I can still eat and drink. And then only when they give the verdict, they will stop eating and drinking, but that's already the end of the day. And so it's okay. And therefore, yes, they do give verdicts, and that would include a verdict of Nidui, if necessary. And so therefore, there is Nidui on the holiday. Amar Abaye, Tashema umenude, so that's a proof. Another proof. Amar Abaye, Tashema umenude she'tiru lo chachamim. Abaye said, this is a braita that says, regarding someone who the sages, hitiru lo chachamim, the sages permitted someone to get a haircut. Menude, anyone who's ostracized, we're reading it this way, anyone who's ostracized, the rabbi said it's permitted. Therefore, you see, there is no nidui during a holiday, because the rabbi said anyone who's ostracized is allowed to go and get a haircut, meaning that's all undone. So that's Abaye's proof to say there's no nidui during the holiday. But Abaye disagrees. Amar Abaye, that's not what the braita means. Mikatani shetiruhu chachamim, shetiru lo chachamim katani. Doesn't say that the rabbis permitted all cases of someone in nidui, but rather a certain person, this guy who was in nidui, and then he comes to the chachamim and say, listen, I made teshuvah, maybe he was fighting with someone, the rabbis put him in nidui because of what he did, and he went and he apologized and everything's okay, and he comes to the rabbis and says, can you undo it, please? And they undo the nidui. If he undo the nidui during Chol HaMoed, then he can go and take a haircut. So in fact, this Braita is a proof the opposite, is a proof for Rava, that yes, there is Nidui during the holiday, and it would be in place until the rabbis meet and decide on a particular case, and then he can get out, and since he couldn't get a haircut before, he can get a haircut now. All right, and finally, the last case on the list, Misora, who has to leave the camp. And he's not going to be able to enjoy the holiday very well if he's outside the camp and no visitors. So does the laws of Misora apply? Maybe you'll say he's Misora, but now holiday starts. Oh, we break the Misora. Come over, right? What is the law? So we say as follows. Amar Abaye Tashema Hanazir Misora Metumato Letahorato. We have a beraita that says a nazir and mesora, when they are in their purification process, mesora, purification process, going from tumah to tahara, then he is permitted to cut his hair. That means before, when he is tameh, no, habi metumato nahig. So that's a proof that mesora remains mesora during the holiday. And we say maybe not, that beraita is not necessarily proof. Lami baya kamar. It could be talking about a needless to say type of statement as follows. Lami baya bime tumato de la nahig, not aval de toarato nigzor shema yishe yasheb korbenotav kamashmatlan. Of course, right. The law is, needless to say, the law is that while he's tameh, the laws do not apply on the festival. When he's tameh, he can come in, right? And so I might think that, in fact, the prohibitions of a misora do not apply during the holiday, and that's for sure. But I might have thought during his purification process, maybe then he has to keep those laws and stay away. Because we might make a gezerah that we should not allow him to cut his hair to start off his purification process, because maybe if we allow him to cut his hair, then he's going to end up finishing his 7 days of tahara during Chol HaMoed, and then he will delay in bringing his korbanot, not bring it that day during Chol HaMoed, but delay it to the last day on Yom Tov, and then maybe he'll bring his korban on Yom Tov, which is not allowed because individual korban, and he can't bring it on Yom Tov. And so I might have thought that I should make a special gezerah against him, kamash malan. That's what Baraita is teaching us, that if the person during the tahara process also does not. Okay, this is a bit far-fetched that you make such a gezerah, because the kohanim there would not allow him to bring such a sacrifice on Yom Tov. But in any case, the point is that it's not necessarily true from this Baraita, that from when he goes, the Baraita only says explicitly during his purification process, but during his Tumah period, maybe not. Maybe in that case, he does not have to practice the laws of being a Misora. So we're not sure about that. Okay. Amar Rava Tashema, and here we are, we're going to have a final proof. Hasaru al rabot kohen gadol. Pesukim in Vayikra. The context is already talking about a Misora. So why does I have to say an extra word? Hasarua, to include the Kohen Gadol. If a Kohen Gadol has a spot on the skin and it's declared Sarat, yes, the laws of Sarat apply even to a Kohen Gadol. Now, that Kohen Gadol, the Koshana Kerege, the Kula Alma Adame, Titnan, Kohen Gadol, Makrib Onen, Beno, Ochel. A Kohen Gadol, all year round, he is in the state of being like it's a holiday. How so? That just like if an Onen, if a Kohen Gadol loses a loved one, he's onen, he has to bring the sacrifice anyway. He doesn't eat it, right? And we learn this from Aharon when he lost his two sons. He doesn't eat it, but he still brings the korban. In other words, just like a regular person during the festival does not have the laws of mourning, so to a Kohen Gadol, all year round, it's like a time of festival for him. He does not practice the laws of mourning any time of the year, the Kohen Gadol. And there yet, he can become a Misora, even though it's a festival for him all year long. So there you go. We see from this example that Sara'at does apply on the holiday. Shema mina noheg Sara'ato baregel shema mina. And so to summarize these three cases, there are no laws of mourning during Chol HaMoed, but someone who is banned can remain banned or even become banned during Chol HaMoed, and someone who is Misora remains Misora outside the camp, even during Chol HaMoed. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.